This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Richwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us here on Radio Sunderland for Hospitals.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
Last week I interviewed a dear friend of mine, Margaret Story, who has been doing mission work for the last 13 years for a charity called SIFT in Nicaragua, in Central America. And today we're going to hear more from her. She is still with us here, and let's hear what she's got to say this week, because she really was an inspiration in what she said last week. Margaret, it's lovely to have you back here, but you had trouble getting back home this time, didn't you, with difficulties with documents and obviously with COVID.
Yes.
Travel wise, tell us about your journey home this time.
Well, I didn't get home the previous year because I didn't have my visa. Things had turned quite political, and the pandemic as well, so everything went wrong that year to prevent me from getting home. But I did eventually manage to get home in December this year. I had to have the COVID tests. I had to go and pay a fine because I had been living illegally through no fault of my own. And so it was quite traumatic at the end to get home, but I managed to get fresh flights and pass my tests and everything. I couldn't travel through America because sadly, I had two vaccines in Bluefields, but they were the Russian Sputnik, which England don't recognise, or Canada or America. And so I couldn't travel through America. So I had to find a route that took me to Mexico, to France, to London, and eventually up to Newcastle. So it was a 43 hours travelling and about 3 hours sleep. But I coped with it because I knew there was a lovely end. I knew I was going to be arriving home after being away for a year and 9 months. And so that's nearly forgotten about now, that journey. It's not painful or anything because I've got the comfort now of my own home and seeing my family and friends. So the journey is behind me now, but it wasn't easy.
Mm-hmm. That brings trouble with the booster, doesn't it, in this country, the mixing of Sputnik and what we have here.
At the moment, I think they don't know how to cope with me. There's the dilemma, can they give me another two vaccines, or have I got enough in my system with the Russian vaccine that they aren't terribly sure what it contains? Mm-hmm. And so at the moment, I can't have another two vaccines, which means it looks like I'm not going to be able to have a booster as well. Because if they don't accept the Russian ones, how can they give me a booster on something that they don't recognise? So I don't know. And if that's the case, then I won't be able to get a COVID pass, which will possibly prevent me from getting out the country again.
Yes.
So I do face problems ahead if they can't decide what I can have.
So you're wondering whether the door is going to open or close for another visit to Nicaragua, much in God's hands.
Absolutely. But, you know, I usually take three suitcases out.
Yes.
2.5 cases of that is aid to give to people. Well, I've got two packed already.
You're fully expecting to be going.
So, yes.
So you're really saying to God, here I am, send me on.
Again.
You've chosen that for your introductory song this time. Would you to tell us about Here I Am?
Well, I was at a midweek service that wasn't planned to go to, but I knew I really wanted to go to it on this occasion to support the person who was being inaugurated. And the Bible reading was Isaiah 6, verses 1 to 8. And it was when it got to verse 8, and the Lord said, you know, whom shall I send? Who will go before me? And Isaiah replied, here am I, send me. And it was as if I had heard that reading for the first time. Mm-hmm. I sat and cried the rest of the service because I knew something was going on inside me. And then there was communion to follow, and the organist was playing music as we went forward for communion. And the very song is the one that I've chosen to start with, is Here I Am, Lord. Because as I was singing it, you know, here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord? It was questioning. I have heard you calling in the night. I will go, Lord, where you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart. And I just kept thinking, how can I sing that if I'm not going to do something about it? Mm. And so I did something about it. And I do honestly believe that was the Lord calling me out, because I can hold those people of Bluefields in my heart and love them, warts and all, but all just because of God sending me.
Shall we listen to that song?
Yeah, sure.
I, the Lord of sea and sky, I have heard my people cry, all who dwell in dark and sin. My hand will save. I who made the stars of night, I will make their darkness bright. Who will bear my light to them? Whom shall I send? Here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord? I have heard you calling in the night. I will. Feast for them, my hand will say. Finest bread I will provide, till their hearts be satisfied. I will give my life to them. Whom shall I send?
That was John Michael Talbot singing Here I Am, Lord. Margaret, you've been very ill out there yourself. Describe hospital conditions to us out there.
Oh, absolutely shocking. Absolutely shocking. There's very little help given. The nurses are there to administer medication, change wound dressings. So you need an accompaniment, we call it an accompanier, someone to be there with you. You get one sheet. If you want another sheet, either to lie on or to cover you, you take it. You don't get a pillow. You've got to take your own water. You've got to take your own toilet roll. You've got to take your bowl and your cup. And the food trolley will come into the corridor. And obviously, if you can't get out of bed, you've got to depend on the person that is coming to look after you to hear the shout of the trolley to go with your bowl and your cup to get your food. If you've got nobody there, then you don't get fed. If you don't have a bowl, you don't get fed. Mm-hmm. And that's why lately, with this pandemic, I've been helping the hospital a lot with donations that people send. Because of the desperate need, the COVID people, because people couldn't go in and visit them, I was doing emergency packs of basic things And it started with one lady who was very sick with COVID. They came and gave her a medication. And she says, well, I need some water. And they says, oh, well, we don't have water. And that woman had to try searching to get some water from someone else to take her medication. So these basic packs, emergency packs that I make up, have always got the toilet roll, the bottle of water, the hand gel, things that, you know, emergency packs when they come in as an emergency with nothing. Mm-hmm. But the director of the hospital also said, is there any way you can help us with towels and sheets and blood pressure units and even mattresses? I even bought 7 mattresses, 2 blood pressure units, 2 of the things that clip on your finger to give you. So the conditions are just so bad. They're cramped. You have people just lined up in beds on the corridor because they're just so out of space and they don't have the manpower. You really need someone there to help to look after you. It was absolutely shocking when I was in. The conditions of the toilets, it's awful.
We don't know how fortunate we are in this country with our NHS.
I've always said I will never, ever, never, ever complain about our NHS.
It's wonderful.
I can't.
And the way it's been through the COVID. You couldn't have achieved all of this without the financial help of local Christians, Margaret.
Oh, sure.
And others, perhaps. Tell us what difference their contributions have made to your work.
Well, basically, my job out there is to see to the school scholarships, which SIFT, well, people sponsor a child and that money comes through SIFT and I administer that. But in my spare time, I do a lot of projects and it's with people's donations because I self-fund, so I don't have the finances to be able to do these things personally out of my money. My money pays for my keep out there, pays for my flights. So it's when people give donations, they have my word that that will go on to projects. And so I have wells dug, playgrounds built, many houses built, I pay for people's medication, pay for them to get to the capital for their treatment. And that is just, I couldn't cope. I would only be out there doing the basic thing of saying to all the children's education. But because I have these finances, I've been able to do so many things that I know has enriched people's lives.
Mm. And you also take gifts of chicken to people at Christmas. Tell us about Christmas, Margaret.
Well,
compare it with our country.
Every 2 months I give out bags of food rations, but Christmas, you know, they eat very meagerly, but it is important to them to try and have a family meal together on Christmas Eve. And if they can afford a chicken, they will have a chicken. Christmas Day is quite a quiet day. They have started getting some fairy lights, some will try to decorate their homes, but the majority of children that I deal with won't be getting a Christmas gift. The Christmas gifts aren't important because they don't have the money to buy them. But being together is important to them. So if they can manage to get a meal together, a chicken and rice and beans, they will do that to be together. But gifts, they can't because they don't have the finances. And that is one of my biggest struggles when I come home for Christmas, because I've seen the other half of what it's like, and it just appalls me on how wasteful we are with money. We buy so much food as if food was going out of fashion. And I really, really struggle. The beauty of it is that I'm home with my family, but I struggle with how much is spent. And I get involved with that as well. I get roped into it as much as I don't like it. Mm. But they've got it right. You know, they will attend church and they will keep Christ in Christmas, where so many of us in this country just take Christ out of it. Christ is in their Christmas as they meet
their
together as a family. Yes,
Margaret, you've had your fair share of tragedies out there. I seem to remember a boy drowning and a little boy who had no roof to his mouth, a little boy with a cleft palate.
He was my
you
first.
You yourself nearly died out there. Can you just tell us about the kind of life out there?
The little boy with a cleft palate, he was about a year when I met him with no roof to his mouth. And the mother couldn't do anything. She hadn't the finances to build him up for an operation. And I worked with that woman to get the boy the operation. And he's now, I think he must be about 13, 12.
And
it was my first time out there. He was operated on. The first time was to put his lip together. And then the next year I went out, I said, okay, you now need to get his roof built, because he still had no roof to his mouth. So if he ate too much, it would come down his nose. And so the next year we got the roof done to his mouth, and that boy will still run and greet me, still look in my bag to see if I've got any candies, because as a child he was so used to just delving into my bag. I always called him my first miracle. It was the one that I was first of all able to help.
His name was Darren, wasn't
it? Darren.
Darren, yes.
Wow, yes. He's a lovely boy. He's at a special school because he hasn't, matured. He hasn't grown. He's still quite small, but intellectually as well, he has problems. But he can fight. He can hold his own with anybody. He's like a live ball of fire. He will stand up for himself. But he was lovely, Darren.
What was the tragedy at sea that you told me about?
Another boy, Wesley, he used to come and help Pastor Ed carry the water from his truck into the house, and I would buy him a football to play. His mum had left him and his sister to be looked after by someone in Bluefields, and she had gone to another island called Corn Island. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was the Easter vacation. He went on this boat. I think it's about a 4.5 hour journey on a slow boat. So him and his sister went to visit the mom. And so as they were coming back, the little girl, they were travelling at the night, and the little girl was going round the boat asking, "Have you seen my brother? Have you seen my brother?" And they would say, "Oh, he'll be sleeping somewhere. You know, when we dock into Bluefields, you'll find him." So when they docked into Bluefields, there was no Wesley. And I think it was a day later, someone said at the time, they thought the conditions were pretty bad, I think, on the boat. And they had seen what they thought was a bucket falling off the boat. And it had obviously been the boy. And the following day, they found him floating. It was so tragic.
That must
tragic.
Have been so upsetting for you all.
I spoke at his funeral about what the lovely boy that he was. And then we had, my daughter said, "Mom, can I do something?" You know, and I said, "Well, I'm having a seat donated to the church, and in memory of a friend who had died." I says, "Why don't we do two, and we'll have one made." So I had the plaques made in Wall's End. I had the plaques made of his name and his date. And
dedicated to Wesley.
And dedicated to him.
Wow.
So, you know, he lives on as people sit on that chair. Yes. That bench is still there all these years now.
And what about the third tragedy, you falling down a well and nearly killing yourself, Margaret, through the treatment you had to endure afterwards?
That was amazing. How there's no way that I could say God was not in control of all that. For all, I would never want it to happen again. There's some part of me that says I don't regret that happening.
You were digging the well, though, weren't you?
Yeah,
you didn't just fall down the well. You were digging it, weren't you?
I was helping to dig it, and this particular day, I think we're only down to about 14 feet. A well can go down 30, 40 feet. But when it's not too deep, you put your leg over, and there's holes put out in the inside of the well for you to work your feet down. And I just put my foot over the first one, and it slipped out, and so I landed down to the bottom.
So how far did you fall?
About 14 feet, we think.
Oh, I didn't realise it was that deep.
And so obviously I landed on my feet, because that's the only way you can go on a narrow well. And then ended up on my bottom, but my foot, my ankle bone, my foot was twisted and the ankle bone was on the top of my foot. But there were so many instances there that there was a truck outside this house where I was, and we didn't even know a truck could have got along that path, but it was right outside this house.
Convenient.
Absolutely. God had placed that man there. I think he was looking at some land beyond it. And so they hauled me out. So someone came down to pick me up and got me up as far as they could, and people hung down and got my arms and they dragged me out. And this man got me to hospital. And when I offered to pay him, he just shook his head and pointed to heaven, kind of thing. And the friend that came with me, he took me in, and the very first person we saw as we went in was another dear friend. Miss Margaret, what are you doing here? Oh, I fell down Nancy's well. He says, I need to stay with you. It was my first year, so very little Spanish. He says, I'll stay with you. He says, I'm just here for a test, a test result, because you'll need me to help you interpret. So he stayed with me. They got me sorted out. And then I was put in a wheelchair and told to come back a week later to have it checked. They put a partial cast on me. And as I'm going out the door, we thought, where do we go from here? Pastor Ed's at a meeting. How do we get home? We can't go further with this wheelchair. When another couple from church were on their way in to visit someone in the hospital. Miss Margaret, what have you done? She says. So I told her. She said to her husband, go and get the car. He was a taxi driver. So he came and got the car and took me home. And then things just went from bad to worse, because I had to be operated on. Mm-hmm. They thought I had only twisted my foot because I could move my toes. But in actual fact, all the medication they gave me had me bleeding internally. And so I had 6 units of blood, and that's the claim that people have in Bluefields on me. They reckon that I'm more Nicaraguan than I am English because I've had 6 units of their blood. So they still hold up to me that I'm more Nicaraguan. But I just continued to get worse because they hadn't picked her up in the hospital that I was bleeding internally. So I was put into intensive care, then I was flown as an emergency to the capital, where with an endoscopy they realised that all the medication I had been on was taking the lining off my stomach, was killing off my red blood cells, and had caused a bleeding duodenal ulcer. So that's what it had been happening. I had been bleeding internally, but they hadn't picked it up in Bluefields. And I was virtually, at that point, I was absolutely life-threatening.
Yes. Oh, Margaret, you could have done with the NHS.
And so, yes, it was a horrendous experience.
So have I asked you, is there any time where you've really been afraid?
No.
In Nicaragua? Would that have been the point?
No. I had complete peace. There was only once, that was just before they put me into intensive care, I vomited. I had a fever, and then I vomited and realised that it was blood that was coming out. And I had such a peace, but all I can remember is saying, my life is ending. Mm-hmm. But I had no fear whatsoever. And I still to this day don't do fear. I don't do worry. I've trained myself, and that happened with an experience about 4 or 5 years ago, when it was discovered a lump in my neck, which the hospitals here said was either cancer or pre-cancer. And I used to lie in bed planning my funeral, because I've got cancer, or I'm going to get cancer. And I thought, I can't cope with this. So I remember saying to the Lord, okay, I'm giving it all to you, all of it. I'm not going to keep anything back, because that means I can still worry a little bit. And so every time after that, when I thought of this neck and seeing the specialist, I switched off like that, because I thought, I can't insult you, Lord. I've given it all over to you. Mm-hmm. And all through this past 2 years of trauma, I've not honestly, hand on heart, the worried ones.
I wonder if any of our listeners have ever heard such a determined and dedicated person as you, Margaret. You really are inspirational. If you found that you had to stay in this country and you couldn't go back there, what kind of things would you like to lend your talents to here?
I would leave that open to God.
Good answer, sorry.
I've been led by God all these 13 years, he directed me out there. He's, at all of the traumas, he's got me through it. And so, why not continue until he tells me? Once I turned 70, people thought, oh, well, this is it. You've reached that nice round figure. You should retire now. Mm. And said, but why? The Lord's still got plenty of work for me out there. And I still honestly feel that now. That's why 2 suitcases are packed already. But if the Lord says, if I get it true, and I know it's got to be a true word of God, mm-hmm. that I've got to quit, then I'll accept it. As disappointing as I imagine it would be, mm-hmm. I've got to accept that that is God's plan, and I know he'll use me wherever, because mm-hmm. I can't sit idle.
Margaret, thank you so much. You've been fascinating to listen to, and I don't think God's ever going to let you go to waste, whether you're there or here or whatever. And may he bless all of the things you do from now on too. Thank you for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
This has to bring our interview and our programme to a close. I've loved speaking to Margaret's story today, and I'm sure you've enjoyed listening and been fascinated by all the things she's been telling us about. It's goodbye from us here, from Andrew Ridgwick, my technician, and myself. Have a lovely week, everybody. Bye for now.
Here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord? I have heard you calling in my night. If you